So the guy is called Abu Hamza al-Yemini, which is very obviously just a nom de guerre. Abu Hamza, son of Hamza al-Yemini from Yemen, is certainly not a real name. But in media reporting, and as far as we understand at the Counter-Extremism Project, he was one of the military commanders of a splinter group called Huras al-Din. Now, two sentences about Huras al-Din. As you may remember, there was an al-Qaeda affiliate in Syria called al-Nusra Front that was actually battling with the Islamic State for predominance in the Syrian battlefield for a while. Now, al-Nusra allegedly separated from al-Qaeda, and I say allegedly because al-Nusra leaders, Julani, asked for permission from al-Qaeda to separate from them. So I'm not sure whether this was a tactical move or an ideological conversion a couple of years ago. And renamed itself as a couple of names, but now it's called Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. Pretty much at the same time, in order to give more credence that this new group, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, is not really part of the al-Qaeda network, at least outside visibility, a splinter group was created called Huras al-Din. Now, Huras al-Din is supposed to include all of the former foreign non-Syrian, non-Iraqi members of al-Nusra or Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, and is supposed to be, according to what, you know, al-Nusra, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham put out, to be the actual al-Qaeda affiliate in Syria right now. Now, as you can see from my words, I don't really buy that narrative, but I do know several governments do, which I find problematic. So, nevertheless, Huras al-Din exists. It has quite a few foreigners. Al-Yemini, the guy from Yemen, is a clear indication that it's still the case. It still operates under the broader umbrella of Hayat Tahrir al-Sham in Idlib province and is supposed to be the al-Qaeda affiliate, I would say, as is Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. But I'm getting in the minority in this opinion among governments at this point.
One of the things that I think you mentioned, and I've heard this from others as well, is going after groups like this for the U.S., it's designed to take away what might be an international attack threat, meaning that this group might be one of those groups that might be working on international attacks. Do you get that sense about this?
Well, it's my understanding that this is exactly what the U.S. forces try to achieve with airstrikes like this. And we had been in touch over the last couple of months repeatedly because of these various strikes in Africa and Syria. As for the Syrian situation, we don't have any more details of what the background of this strike was. A military commander, of course, is always the one primarily responsible for attack planning. But in Syria, of course, you also have U.S. troops operating. You do have Turkey just around across from the border. There is a heated up situation now with Turkey gearing up to do more military strikes against the Kurdish forces, i.e. upsetting the already quite shaky security balance in Syria as it is. So it may have been, you know, part of preventing some kind of strike on the US homeland or Europe, but it also, you know, very clearly didn't harm the internal situation in Syria to take a military commander of a terrorist group off the battlefield at this point.
So moving forward, what does this group do? How important was this individual to that group, do you think?
Well, as I said, the military commander is always a key figure. So, yes, it's always very, you know, a good success and a good propaganda success to kill the leader of a group. However, these tend to be replaced. And in really active terrorist groups, the leader really doesn't, if you think about al-Qaeda and Zawahiri or the new ISIS leader, they really don't have much operational responsibilities anymore because they are frequently targeted. The military commanders, however, is what I call the group of facilitators. Financial facilitators is another really valuable target because it actually sets back the operational capabilities of the group, to a certain extent, sets it back for at least a significant amount of time because these facilitators do have skills that are not quite as easily to set back, to replace. A leader is a symbolic figure. Of course, he has to have some credibility, has to have some kind of seniority, but there's always one or two other individuals who immediately can replace and play that role. A military commander has to have actual battlefield experience or experience in organized terrorist attacks that you can only get by having done it for a long time. Meaning now, Huras al-Din has a problem replacing this individual. They will eventually, of course, but it is actually a very significant setback for this group, especially since it's not one of the larger ones.
How many other groups like this, to your knowledge, are out there in that area that the U.S. or the West have to be concerned about?
Well, take your pick. Unfortunately, Syria is still a mess. Just because we don't hear much about Syria anymore, because everyone is now really justifiably very concerned about Ukraine, doesn't mean Syria is any better off than it used to be before. And there is this part of Idlib that is now run by Tahrir al-Sham. Under this umbrella, there are lots of splinter groups who essentially operating under the umbrella of Tahrir al-Sham, because if they wouldn't, Tahrir al-Sham would kill them. And there you have a variety of radicalism. So the Huras al-Din is just one of the better known groups, but there are Chechen individuals in cells that are operating there. There is still the largest number of Uyghurs from China operating Syria, far more than are operating currently in Afghanistan. You do have still some foreigners, you have ISIL cells. So it really is still a very active terrorist area, contained now with the help of Syria, Iran, Turkey to a certain extent, Russia for sure, in this area of Idlib. But as you may have seen a couple of weeks ago, where the Turkish security forces announced that they had, first they said the leader of ISIL, luckily not, but a very key leader of the Islamic State in Istanbul, that means you still have a regional terror network that is very active. And so Syria, you will, as with Afghanistan, you only ignore at your peril.
Syria itself, as you said, is a mess. Is there any, I guess, hope on the horizon that anything's going to change there anytime soon?
Not strategically. I think this is a very much, you know, frozen is the wrong word because it's still an active war zone. But it is, the power blocks are not able to overcome each other. You do have a quite effective Kurdish bloc, which is so effective that now Turkey is getting concerned about it because of its cross-border potential effects on the PKK inside Turkey. And they may gear up for a rather major military operation, at least it looks like, which may upset the balance. Then you do have the Assad regime with the help of Iran and Russia. I don't think there's anything that you can be taken away from the Assad regime with the forces that are on the ground in Syria at the moment. And then you have the Idlib situation, which is this, you know, Syrian opposition very much dominated by extremist group area of Syria. And between those blocks, I don't think any great power shift at the moment is on the horizon, with the caveat that it all depends on how far, how deep, and how thorough the Turkish military may want to conduct its attack against Kurdish positions, which incidentally also hold all of the ISIL prisoners that we don't want to be released in Syria. So there are no ISIL prisoners of great number in Assad's prisons. There are tens of thousands of them in Kurdish custody. And they're doing us a favor by keeping them. And, you know, we should have gotten most of at least our nationals back, but we haven't. So, you know, this is a time bomb. And depending on what the Turkish government and military is deciding to do, this may become a major problem down the line.
Dr. Hans Jacob Schindler, Senior Director at the Counter-Extremism Project. J.J. Green, WTOP News.